Welcome to the return of the Star Blades podcast with me, Chris Holt, joined by the Stars United writers, James Shield and Danny Hall. We're into the international break now, which no one around here particularly likes, but we'll talk a bit about the pros and cons about the pause in play at the minute, with United currently riding high, although with some injury issues that may just make this a break that could work in their favour. We'll also have a look at, take the opportunity to look back on the campaign so far. Who's impressed, who's surprised, and maybe is there anybody that still needs to step it up a little bit. As well as that, we'll go around the division to discuss the latest news in the Championship with a big move happening not too far away from here. This is the Star Blades podcast. I quite like doing that. James, Danny, we don't like international breaks, do we?
No. We don't, but if we get more stirring intros like that, Chris, then bring them on.
I'll have us hyped every week.
Yeah, the highlight so far, isn't it? Definitely.
James, it's. I mean, from the point of view of fans, I think maybe particularly, well, probably most fans really. The international break is a distraction that nobody particularly likes, unless you're actually going to watch England or you're absolutely obsessed by your particular country. It just seems a bit of a, particularly like given that we've had games called off for one reason or another over the past few weeks, it's just added a little bit of a stop start nature, which, as we'll go into, there are pros and cons, really. What's your thoughts on whether it's a good thing or a bad thing for United so far, anyway?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's absolutely no doubt if Paul Heckingbottom was sat on this podcast that he'd come on here and tell us that Sheffield United would rather be in action this weekend. And there are pros and cons to the international break, as you've said. We've already seen one of the cons this week. And that's Anil Ahmed Hodžić being injured whilst on international duty with Bosnia and Herzegovina. And that is going to hurt Sheffield United really, really hard, because I think most United fans will know what I mean when I say this. They've not just lost one player, they've probably lost three, because he's not only a damn good centre-half, he's also a pretty good striker and clearly a frustrated wing-back as well. So that is going to be a big issue for Sheffield United. They've got momentum. They would rather be playing. But I think what they've got to do, and what they have been quite good at doing, actually, over the past 12 months, because we've not just had, obviously, the Queen's death when the games were called off then as well. We've also had COVID within the past sort of 12 months as well. That really interrupted Sheffield United's season as well. But what they have been quite good at doing, I think, is turning a negative into a positive. And that's what they've got to do during this international break. They've got far too many injuries for anybody's liking. The injury situation, for one reason or another, at Bramall Lane is quite ridiculous at the moment. And all credit to this team for actually being 3 points clear at the top of the table. Because I think you could make a damn good Championship side out of the players they've got out at the moment. None of those players are due to come back immediately after the international break. But I think what the staff at the training ground can do, they can't do any football work because, quite frankly, nobody's there. There's only a handful of players or senior players who have actually stayed behind. But what they can do is use this time to try and maybe bring forward the return dates for players like Jaden Bogle, Ben Osborne, Jack Robinson, Kieran Clark, because they're going to need these lads going forward, particularly if they lose anybody else during the international break. And they can also look at getting some of those players who have just returned from injury, like Billy Sharp, properly back up to speed. And as Paul Heckingbottom said during his post-match interview at Preston, although it did sort of get lost in the noise a little bit, Ollie McBurney, who's been in absolutely remarkable form, has been carrying a little bit of a groin problem as well. They can look to address that. So there's good, there's bad as well.
Danny, that injury, as James pointed out there to Ahmedović, that's a massive blow, isn't it? I was wary of taking not that I'm saying they're telling any lies, but taking Bosnia at face value in terms of how long they reckon he's going to be out for, because my initial opinion was that, well, we'll let Sheffield United be the judge of that rather than allow them. But regardless, it looks like he's probably going to miss some action from what we can gather. So that is a massive blow, isn't it, given his form since he joined the club?
Oh, huge, huge, yeah. As Jim said there, you know, three players in one is a brilliant description of Van Gaal, you know, so far, the way that he's taken to life back in English football. I think, you know, the fact that he started off his pro career in England is overlooked sometimes. You know, the way that he's taken to life at Sheffield United, adapting to such a unusual system. You know, a lot of teams do play a back three, but not many play it like Sheffield United do. I think that's fair to say. And, you know, the way the fans have taken to him as well, you know, he's established himself as a real fans' favourite, which, you know, at United, you do that by, you know, your performances, your weight of personality, don't you? You know, you don't shirk a tackle, you get stuck in and you give everything, and he's definitely done that. So he looks to me like a player who's been there. You know, he looks like he's been playing this system, you know, from day one, doesn't it? Not someone who's been playing 10 games in, so it's a massive blow, you know, at both ends of the pitch. You know, it still seems strange to me that we're talking about defenders and the impact that they have going forward. Even after all these years, but it's a massive blow at both ends of the pitch. You know, as you say, looking at the positives, I suppose, if he's out for 4 weeks, you know, two of those weeks possibly is international break anyway, isn't it? If we're talking, you know, trying to look on the bright side a little bit, the concern for me was the at least 4 weeks, which, you know, with these, you know, I'm no physio, I'm no fitness expert, as you can probably tell, you know, these muscle injuries do tend to often, you know, you see it rumble on longer than you see people come back quicker, is what I'm trying to say, if that makes sense. More often than not, we've seen that United in recent weeks with the amount of setbacks. You know, Kieran Clark's been a week away from returning, you know, for 9 games now. So, you know, players like, you know, Ender, you know, they were seem to be back in training, you know, back soon. And then, you know, he's still no closer and he's still 4 or 5 weeks away. So we've seen these things do often take time. Hopefully, Anel is not one of those. You know, hopefully he is a quick healer and he's back sooner rather than later. But, you know, there's no doubt it's a huge blow. It's not even the fact that, you know, there's a ready-made, I don't want to call Chris Basham a replacement, you know, because he's much more than that. But there is a player there who can step in. Chris Basham knows the role. You know, everyone knows what Chris Basham brings. The issue is on the other side, and the amount of left-sided injuries that United have had in recent weeks is remarkable. You know, I remember looking at Paul Heckingbottom at Swansea when Reece Norton-Davies went down for some treatment. I'm thinking, imagine what he's thinking there. The only left-sided senior fit defender at the club has just gone down injured. luckily, he got back up because Reece, I think, even if he broke his leg at Swansea, I think he would have played the week after by the sound of things, just because of the sheer ridiculousness of the crisis. But yeah, it's a massive blow. How United deal with that remains to be seen. I think both me and James have had a stab at kind of second-guessing Paul this week. Will he return to a back four? Will he promote, you know, Kieran Gordon and play Basham at left side? Will he play, you know, kind of go left field, maybe, you know, read a cadre at wing-back? You know, none of these options are ideal, but, you know, it's not something new for Sheffield United. They've had to kind of adapt and overcome, haven't they, with injuries so far this season. And, you know, top of the table after 10 games, 3 points clear. I don't think you can argue that it's not working. So, yeah, I say if Paul was sat here now, he'd say, you know, the injury is ridiculous. We don't want them. But I think he'll take a little bit of comfort from the fact that they have been in this situation far too often so far this season, and they've managed to overcome. So if we can take some slight positives from it, you know, I think we'll take what we can, won't we?
I think the big issue in terms of how Sheffield United solve this, and this is only a personal opinion, there'll be people watching this or listening to this who may well disagree. You two guys may well disagree. I think, as we've both looked at, yes, there is that opportunity to switch formation. But I think that's something that probably Paul and his coaching staff will be quite reluctant to do, because we've seen Sheffield United do that in the past and it's not always worked. I think the way to try and solve this problem is to be very, very wary about doing something that just then creates an issue elsewhere on the pitch.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're better off trying to get one or two players working out what they need to do rather than
basing
the entire team around it.
Absolutely. Spot on. That's my thinking. It might not be an ideal solution, but just find somebody who can play either where Anel has been playing or where Rhys Norrington-Davies may well have to slot into. That would be my thing, because what you don't want to do is disrupt one or two other areas of a team that's functioning so well. The one positive that I will say is there is a negative, and that is that by the time most of Sheffield, whatever solution they come up with, by the time most of Sheffield United's players come back and they'll actually get an opportunity to try and road test this on the training ground, which they will have to do, whatever solution they come up with, there's going to be very little time to do that. But I think just picking up something Danny said there that I agreed with, when you look at Ahmed Hozic, the way that he's slotted into this system, the way that he's grasped it so quickly, really has been a revelation. But what that goes to, if the people around him weren't functioning as well, I very much doubt he would have been able to do it as quickly. So although we always make jokes about footballers being a little bit daft and what have you, they're actually not. They've just got a very different intelligence to us. They will see things on a football pitch that you and I won't see developing. They will be able to anticipate things and react to things much quicker than you and I would, because they've got that footballing intelligence. They see the game through a different sort of lens to us. And I think what we have seen, because there's a huge swathe of new players coming to this squad, Sheffield United haven't just got good players. Technically, I mean, they've got very intelligent players as well. So although it's not ideal, I think that's something that Paul and his assistants, Stuart McCall and Jack Lester, will be grasping onto.
Is there an argument, and I'm only throwing this in, I know it would be difficult given that if you bring somebody into the club, the chances are they're not playing. Well, in fact, they definitely won't be playing. But is there an argument or a case for making some kind of short-term signing just to get them through maybe the next 6 weeks or whatever?
Well, there is, yes. I don't know whether the finance would actually be there to do that, because you can read between the lines on a couple of things that Paul has mentioned in his press conferences recently and basically realise that money is not in bountiful supply at Bramall Lane right now. It's something they've done in the past. They obviously used the situation. It sounds terrible saying that, doesn't it? But listen, it's what football clubs do. They obviously use the situation in Eastern Europe right now to their advantage when they bought Filip Jeremovic in last season. Whether or not it'll be possible, I don't know. I think there would be players who would do it, but I think it's also to the better players, it's quite a difficult sell, isn't it? Because you know that, yes, I'm probably going to be signing a contract up until January, but I may well only be playing a couple of games. And the good players, ordinarily, you would think, well, I'll take that. You know, some pay is obviously better than no pay whatsoever. But I think the good players, the really good free agents, are going to they'll have other people interested in them as well, won't they?
It'll take too long to get them up to speed, really, Danny.
As I say, the rest have not played since May, have they? Just by virtue of being free agents. So we did a piece earlier in the week, and, you know, some players that they could target. And in fairness to the players, you know, they've all had better careers than I will ever have in football. But none of them particularly stood out as particularly inspiring. You know, you didn't look at any and go, yeah, that's a ready-made example. So, yeah, I'm sure it's something that, you know, all of his staff will have considered. Like James said, if whether the finance was kind of suit that, but they've left room, of course, to do that by not registering Jack O'Connell in the 25-man squad. So they have got a spare space on their squad for a player before January. Whether that will materialise or not, like I said, there's no one that particularly jumps out at you that says, you know, that's a signing, let's get him in. They tried it before, of course, with Andre Wisdom last season. They had him in on trial, and the same issue was up with that deal, wasn't it? You know, he wasn't fit enough, and by the time you get him up to speed to play, you know, no ordinary left back is going to be able to play this system unless they're really up to speed, really in tune with it, really fit as well, of course. So that by the time you get a you know, Danny Rose or someone who's plucking a name out of thin air, you know, is obviously a good footballer, really good footballer, really intelligent footballer, as James touched on. But by the time you get him up to speed physically to play that kind of left-back role, you know, will Ender Stevens, will Ben Osborne be back anyway? So, you know, is there any point in doing that? You know, we'll, I suppose, the proof being the pudding, won't it? If one signs, then we'll know that it was. And if not, then I guess we'll go with what we've got.
Why not give someone from the academy a chance as well?
Yeah, that's the argument, isn't it? What's the academy for there? If you know, Paul knows the academy better than anyone. You know, they've won the league or gone close to winning the league last couple of years, haven't they? So they're obviously a talented group of players. They play a similar system, as far as we can tell, to the first team. So they know, you know, the mechanics of it. Maybe not as in tune as Max Lowe or Ender Stevens would be. But like I said, what are they there for if not? You know, there's an opportunity there. You know, go and take it.
Okay, that's enough of... It wasn't too negative, but it's certainly... There's certainly a bit of a dampener put on things with that news of the injury. However, as far as the team generally is concerned, we're into... I think I saw somebody saying we're a fifth away of the way into the season. I didn't work that out for myself, but we're certainly in that position where... I think you can start looking at the table and see how things are shaping up, at least. I mean, obviously, loads could happen between now and May, but we've at least got to the point where we can see who's likely to be up there and who's putting up a challenge or who's started well or started poorly, at least. Sheffield United, obviously, right at the top of the tree at the minute, performing well, digging out results, which has been important as well whenever they haven't been playing particularly well, and on other occasions, absolutely wiping teams off the park. I'm just going to have a bit of a look back over over what's happened over the past, what are we on, 10 games? 10, 11 yep. games? And just get your view on kind of the best of things so far. Individually, we'll look at, first of all, who have been your standout players? You don't have to give me one, because to be fair, I don't think there's been anybody who's played particularly poorly, and there have been quite a few impressive performances. But if you can give me each, I don't know, two or three anyway. James, you go first. Who stood out for you most?
Well, I think obviously Anel, as we've talked about earlier, I think he's been exceptional. Illiman Ndjaye, he's really grown as well. It was going to be quite an important season, I think, for this one, just in terms of Illiman's maturity, especially with Morgan Gibbs-White going last season and everybody looking for him to step into the void that Morgan left. And he's more than done that. He's matured as a player. Paul Heckingbottom says that he hasn't been on the weights over the summer. I don't believe him for one minute. I think you look at the lad, he's stronger. He's lost none of that speed, none of that explosive power that he's got. Unfortunately, none of the skill or the imagination either. I think he's been brilliant. The one as well, I'll give an honourable mention to Max Lowe also, because he had a terrible start at Watford. He admitted his head wasn't in the right place after all the transfer speculation about his future at Bramall Lane over the summer. I think he showed real bottle to recover from that match at Vicarage Road and come back and do superbly well before he, of course, picked up an injury. But I think the one that I've really enjoyed watching the most, and I know Danny and I often have a laugh about this at games, but is Ollie McBurney. Because, again, you talk about bottle. He must have been on the floor at the end of last season, injured, not playing well when he was fit, not scoring goals anyway, knowing full well, although footballers will tell you that they don't read or listen to what's written and said about them, I think that's a complete lie. I'm sure they do. In fact, I know they do. Heal and Oni was really under the microscope with Sheffield United supporters. And to come back and score the goals that he has in recent weeks, I think it's been absolutely phenomenal. It says a lot about him as a person. And I also think it says actually a lot about the team in general as well, because fortunately, finally, somebody at that football club seems to have realised that the way you get the best out of Ollie McBurney is not to play him as an out-and-out target man. Takes away, you know, what he brings to the table by doing that. Yes, he can play that role, but it takes away too many of the things that Ollie's really good at. He's now running about. He's getting into those proper central positions in the box and he's scoring goals. So I'm delighted for Ollie McBurney. He's been my, I'm not saying he's been the best player throughout the season, but he's been my, he's been the one I've enjoyed watching the most. Let me put it like that.
Yeah, it, his movement has been superb. McBurney, really, if you watch him up close, you know, there was a time just before he scored where he was actually getting into really good positions and things just weren't falling right for him. It might have been a really good save by the keeper, or he's hit the post, or he's just hit it wide. But he was getting into those positions, and I think any striker or any manager will tell you, if you keep, no one's bothered about you missing chances if you're actually in there getting on the end of them, and because they know that they will come eventually. But it has been good to see his rising confidence as much as anything, and that continuing and building more and more and more. Now we, you know, I know he's a tall lad, but he must feel like he's 8 foot tall whenever he goes out on the pitch now with the form that he's in. Danny, I will give you the opportunity to say Ollie Norwood, since James has inexplicably left him out there.
You've read just my mind. That as red. Surely, you just take that as red, don't you?
You've read my mind. Just talking earlier there, I know you didn't ask this, but that was my moment of the season so far. You know, it's been a great, you know, amount of brilliant individual moments so far. But I think Ollie's goal away at Luton, you know, we were there lucky to witness it, Jim, weren't we, live?
We were.
And I think just the sheer, obviously the goal, the technical excellence of the goal, really, you know, for a man who's not scored in, you know, we wrote it so many times, it was about 7 years by the time that we, you know, it seemed to build up and build up, didn't it? You know, the weight of the world seemed to be on his shoulders. And to take that first time on the volley like he did, you know, and finish it. But then it was the scenes afterwards for me, you know, the sheer outpouring of elation, really. You know, the fans really got involved. But it was the teammates who, you know, they could tell that they almost enjoyed it as much as he did. And I think that says a lot about Ollie's, you know, kind of his popularity, how, you know, how good he is as a person as well as a player. You know, I think a lot of his teammates were almost as buzzing as he was that he finally got off the mark. And like you said, since he's not looked back. And that's just the cliche, isn't it? You know, all he needs is a goal. He needs one to go off his backside. And you think, oh, well. And then, you know, after that, you know, the goal at Hull that squeezed through the keeper's, you know, fingers, they should have saved it. But there's no way McBurney shoots from there, you know, start of the season if he's playing all last season. You know, if he looks to pass it and, you know, his head's down, whatever. That's just the difference, isn't it? That's just football. That's how crazy it is, how it can turn, you know, and how, you know, you get a bit of luck on your side, a bit of good form, and it just seems to, you know, it just seems to all go your way. It's just funny how it all turns around. But in terms of players, I'll not mention the same ones that James just picked for a bit of balance, a bit of variety. Sander has been up there. You know, I know we have jokes about this, don't we, as well, Jim? But especially with all the nonsense and all the talk about his future and everything, you know, Paul's talked about this at length, the way that he's sort of put all that to one side and really focused on football, and, you know, he's not let that affect him. You know, sometimes you see players linked with big moves to Champions League clubs, not a sparkling Champions League club, with all respect to Club Bruges, but still a Champions League club. You'd see that go to players' heads and they kind of down tools and everything. You know, no chance of that with Sander. People we spoke to who know him very well said that won't happen. He's not that kind of guy, you know, a really professional player. And then to carry on performing, I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. And he's, you know, when he's on his best form, you know, in this division, he's a bit of a joke, really. It's a bit of a cheat code, I think. You know, it's almost not fair to watch you know, defenders trying to cope with him as he brushes past them. But a few kind of unsung heroes, really. Wes Fotheringham, you know, you talk about the last few games, you talk about the whole game, you know, that took them back to the top when they were under a bit of pressure. Swansea, you know, games like that when, you know, they've been under the cosh a little bit, and big moments, you know, on, even, you know, big moments in games when, you know, at Preston when it's 2-0, I think it was, and Wes made a big save down to his left. You know, the kind of ghosts of last season when they let slip a 2-goal lead. You know, if that goes back to 2-1 with 15 minutes, whatever it was, left, you know, suddenly you can see people start to look and think, well, is it happening again? But I think that was possibly one of the best saves of the season, really, how quickly he got down to tip that round. He did it again at Hull, at a key moment. You know, they lost the ball on the halfway line, a remarkable double save when everyone in that ground thought that was going to be in. And I think to go from effectively third choice last season to, you know, there's not a keeper in the Championship that I'd swap him for at the minute. So I think he deserves a lot of credit for that.
Just on Wes, I think it's been interesting to see, actually. I think if you compare to, say, the last, I don't know, well, say from when Hickey came in, or certainly after the turn of the year anyway, it felt like Wes Fotheringham was bailing them out maybe three or four times in a game. And there's not quite as many of those moments now. There's maybe just one where he's called into action maybe just once in each game. And that's a big skill in itself. You talk to goalkeeper and coaches, to be able to keep that level of concentration for maybe, as you said there, that was probably, I think it was about the 70th minute when Brown had that shot against him at Preston. And, you know, he's put it off a big save, having actually not had a great deal to do up until that point. And that's huge, because I think I think that was probably one of the things that was leveled against him in terms of his concentration and those types of things in the past whenever he's been at other clubs. And so to be able to pull off a save like that when it's maybe one of the only things you're going to do the entire game is huge, really, for the team and for him.
Yeah, well, his games this season, where he could have had a deck chair out. You know, he could have got the paper and put a flag on and just watched what's happening in front of him unfold, didn't he? Because he's not in games for, you know, no team's going to dominate games for 90 minutes, so there's always a chance that he's going to have something to do. But like you said, people who are more qualified about goalkeeping than we are tell us that's the skill to keep switched on, and when that moment does come, you know, to excel in it, really, because that's what he's been doing. So I think he deserves a lot of credit. Goalkeepers tend to, unless you make him, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 saves a game, tend to go under the radar a little bit, don't they? But I think his sort of contribution at key moments this season's made, you know, a huge difference. Because like I say, if that goal goes in on Saturday at Preston, I think a few fans are certainly looking around and going, here we go again, do you know what I mean? And then just back to the players. I mean, George Baldock's been one for me. You know, I think his sort of end product and the dangerous, you know, nature of his crosses, I think that's really improved. I think that we talked earlier about the negatives of the international break, but I think having players going away on international duty and kind of experiencing that sort of different football, really, you know, everything's different, different coaching, different aspects of everything, really, and that confidence boost. I think you can really see that in George more than anyone, you know, the difference in him before and after being called up for Greece and playing, you know, for his country. I think that's really given him an extra sort of dimension to his game. I think he looks a lot more threatening. He still looks as angry as ever. I mean, he's the angriest footballer I've ever seen. But I think he's added an extra, you know, bit of danger to his crosses and everything. His end product so it seems a little bit better to me. As you touched on before, Ollie Norwood. I mean, it does make me laugh when I read people talking about him being finished and how he's the weak point. And I know football's a game of opinions. You know, we sit on here, we might all disagree on this. And it doesn't mean, you know, doesn't mean we're right. It doesn't mean anyone else is wrong. But then you look at the stats. I mean, I saw a stat the other day where he, in the league, is in the, you know, kind of Venn diagram in the middle. His name's bang in the middle for most chances created, most interceptions and most successful tackles. So he is objectively the best midfielder in this division. That's not me saying that. That's the stats.
Two of those three things are what he's or what people always say that he's rubbish at. Yeah. Like people complain about his tackling, and then winning the ball back, and they still complain about his passing, which is madness, absolute madness. I think, I mean, being objective, I think it's easy for people to look at the negative side of things. And in a sense, Norwood is a little bit like a striker, in the sense that if you have loads of chances, if a striker has loads of chances and he makes a glaring error, a lot of people are going to remember that glaring error. Norwood is pinging a ball around all over the place, and in one of those, say, 20 balls that he plays, kind of is misplaced or goes out, or you know, he gives the ball away, then everyone's going to go, oh, no, Rudy Gay, give the ball away. Nobody remembers the seven chances that he created because he's pinging the ball or he's playing a through ball or whatever. And I kind of get it because it's actually probably a bit more like a goalkeeper. If you play the way he does and you make a mistake, it is really amplified because you've given the ball away. And
they're the standards that he set himself, isn't it? But I said to people before this season, I don't think a lot of people will realise how important he is to this team until he's not there anymore.
No,
I think he's entirely integral to the way this team goes about everything, you know, defensively. Like, I think his work defensively is so underrated. And then, you know, the way that, you know, we talk about the conductor tag, don't we? But that does sum him up so well. He does sort of make the team tick so well, I think. You know, it's not perfect. We're not going to sit here and, you know, we talk about the Wes save at Hull. You know, that came from him losing the ball. You know, we're not going to talk about he doesn't make mistakes. But I think it says a lot about his character as well, that we've seen players before at Sheffield United, you know, in the past who have made a mistake and then you don't see them again for the rest of the game. You know, they go hiding. They don't want the ball. They don't demand the ball. I remember looking at Ollie after that. There was a similar kind of position and he was stood there with his hand in the air saying, give me the ball again. And I think that says a lot about his sort of character, you know, to say, you know, that's gone now, that's fine. I'm not going to hide. I'm going to get on the ball and I'm going to make things happen, you know, even after making that mistake. Because he must know, he must hear the kind of groans when he gives the ball away. You know, he's not daft, you know, football doesn't exist in a bubble. You know, they can hear things that are said about them, you know, in the crowd or whatever. And for whatever reason, he does seem to be, I'm not going to say a boo boy, but he does seem to get a little bit more criticism than I think he deserves. You know, that's fine. That's football. You know, I'm not going to say anyone's wrong for having an opinion, but I think
he sums it up best himself when he says, you know, he said it in a few interviews. I think he said one towards the end of last season and again this year in interviews where, you know, they're going to make mistakes. They're championship footballers, you know, and he admitted himself, if I didn't make mistakes, I basically said I wouldn't be playing for Sheffield United if it didn't make mistakes. You know, he'd be playing in the Champions League for Real Madrid or whatever.
I'll tell you what, Northern Ireland could do with a player like this.
Northern Ireland could do with about six players like it.
But yeah, he's, for all we talk about Illiman, Sander, you know, Anel, you know, all those kind of players for their time, I think Ollie, you know, deserves to be really up there in terms of talking about the, you know, one of the players of the season so far. It's been sent a message by me. According to SofaScore, he's the best player in the division so far. So that's no better judge than that for me.
Well, it's good to see that. It's good to see that everybody else has come on board to what I knew all along.
Fan club, I get a few more members now, Chris.
Has there been? I mean, I could think of one off the top of my head here, and you probably both agree. In terms of players who have maybe surprised you, in terms of how well they've done this season so far, where, you know, we all look at all those players that you said, to be fair, probably expect as much out of them as you've stated there. But has there been other players who you thought, he's doing a lot better, I wasn't expecting him to be as good or as consistent or as impressive he has been?
Personally, I don't think there's anybody. This is just my opinion. I don't think there's been anybody that's absolutely stunned me, because even with the players who have come in, who we've not seen in the, you know, an awful lot of in the flesh, we always knew they were good players. People like Tommy Doyle, you don't play for a team like Manchester City if you're not a good player. Raider Kadra, we've all seen what he can do. I'd like to see a little bit more of him. I don't think there's been anybody that has personally really surprised me. You may well obviously be able to sort of name somebody that has, you, Danny, you might be able to as well. I think the one thing that has surprised me, and this is a real positive for Sheffield United, and we've just sort of touched on it there, talking about Oliver Norwood and some of the other players who have done well. The thing that's really surprised me this season, Paul Heckingbottom always used to have a phrase that he rattled out in press conferences. And we heard it an awful lot last season. And that was, if we play at our best, we very rarely get beaten. If we fall off of those standards, that's when we tend to drop points. The thing that has surprised me this year and has really encouraged me, we saw this at Preston last weekend, is that Sheffield United, this group of players, seems to have now learned the art of, I wouldn't say winning ugly, because I don't think we've seen any really ugly performances this season, but they've learned the art, they're beginning to master that art of being able to grind out a result. They weren't at their best for long periods against Preston North End. Preston were actually the dominant force in that game throughout most of the first half. Thought they looked a good side, actually. If they had a striker up top, I think they'd be an awful lot higher up the table, because there was almost a sense of the Sheffield United about them. They defended as a group. They got everybody behind the ball, and they attacked well as a group as well. There was a real sense of teamwork about North End. But Sheffield United got through the game. That has surprised and pleased me this season, because it's something that they weren't able to do on quite as a consistent basis as they are doing this term last season.
Danny, anybody stood out for you who you may not have expected to be quite so good?
Not particularly. You know, one thing that springs to mind is, I know obviously Illiman, we talked about him a lot. He showed a lot of glimpses of his sort of ability last season, but I think the way that he sort of put that together, you know, in a consistent, you know, a real consistent run. I think we spoke about this with Paul a few weeks ago, that, you know, one of the big, or the big question arguably in the summer was, how are we going to replace Morgan Gibbs-White's performances, goals, assists, you know, who we're going to bring in, who's going to, and I think in the end of it, you know, Illiman sort of stepped up to that role, hasn't he? He sort of, to me, it looks like he's kind of, you know, put his chest out and said, you know what, I can be that main man now. You know, he kind of played second fiddle a little bit to Morgan last season, I think. I mean, that's fair to say, you know, because he was so good, and Illiman was kind of reduced to a sort of bit part role, wasn't he, for a lot when Morgan was fit. But I think now, in that kind of void that's been created by him going back to Wolves and then going to Forest, of course, I think Illiman sort of stepped up and gone, you know what, I can do that. And I think the way he's kind of put that together consistently, you know, we saw glimpses last season, you know, ridiculous goal at Fulham. But I think this time, you know, I don't think he's had a particularly bad game so far this season that I can think of. You know, he seemed to, you know, I think Hecky said recently, you know, his kind of big conversation with Illiman is, it's all right playing well. You have to contribute. You have to score. You have to assist. You know, it's all right looking pretty or whatever. You have to actually make an impact. I think he's really took that on board, you know, with his, I think he's got 5 so far this season, 5 in 10. So you can't argue with that really from a goal scoring point of view. And just the way that he's sort of taken on that responsibility almost and said, you know what, I can be that main man now. I think that's really not surprised me so much, but I think it's the way he sort of stepped up to that mantle. You know, I think, you know, it's almost the case of not missing Morgan Gibbs-White. And I think a lot of fans in the summer were thinking, you know, how on earth are we going to replace him? And they have, they've almost done that without even really thinking about it. So I think that's been a surprise, a pleasant surprise, I think, if that's the right word. That's something that sticks out, just the way that he's sort of put that together. You know, it's almost a case of Morgan who, isn't it?
Okay, then. Seeing as neither of you said what I thought you were going to say.
I'm interested to see who yours is going to be. I was thinking that.
I'm going to throw in Reece Norrington-Davies, who I must admit I wasn't sure was going to be able to cut it at Sheffield United. He's clearly a good player. I just wasn't entirely sold on him. And this season he's been absolutely superb. So that surprised me a little bit.
See, we always knew, didn't we, James?
We did.
But no, fair play to you for backing him. I wasn't entirely sold on him in that position. In fact, he's excelled in two positions this season, having played on the left side of the back three, and then and as a wing back as well. I think he's added a little more of an attacking threat to his game, which probably is where I'm getting at, really, because I felt he was just that little bit more defensive than Enda Stevens when Enda was in his pomp and
his best,
not struggling with injuries.
You'd have loved watching that performance at Swansea then.
Well, that was it, yeah. Like I say, I just wasn't sure that he had that extra bit of attacking nous that I felt Sheffield United needed in that in the system that they play, and he's proved me wrong there. So there you go. That was my
interesting. The two sort of positions that he can play. I think when everyone's fully fit, excluding Jack O'Connell from this, for me, he plays left centre half over Jack Robinson, over Kieran Clark, just for that attacking sort of attacking.
Yeah, well, I think he's shown now definitely that he's able to do that now.
I think long term, I think that's a position that he can really make his own really in this team. So
I've got down here who needs to step it up. I actually don't think there's anybody really. I think as you touched on very briefly there, I think there's a few players we'd like to see a little bit more of. I'm really excited, if that's the right word, when Kadra comes on the pitch, because I think he's just got that little bit extra special. I'd just like to see a little bit more of him, but that's obviously not his fault. That's his kind of struggling, for want of a better word, to get into a very good team at the minute. But I'm sure as the season progresses, we'll see a lot more from him. Just to wrap things up, we're just going to have a little bit of a look around the division. The biggest thing over the past week or so has been changes in managerial positions, notably Huddersfield and Cardiff. First of all, are we surprised at how poorly both of them, particularly Huddersfield, I guess, have done so far this season?
Yes. I'm surprised with Huddersfield. I must admit, I didn't think they'd have a flying start to the season. Carlos Corberan, I mean, he's obviously left the job that he took at Olympiacos. He's gone this week as well, hasn't he, from there? But
there must have been an awful lot of everybody thinking this past week of how have we ended up like this?
Yeah, I don't think you can overstress the job that Carlos did at Huddersfield last season. And I wonder if when he left in the summer, if he looked at that and thought, I can't actually squeeze much more out of this group. But they were a team in the true sense of the word, and they were certainly punching above their, I don't like saying above their weight, because there's some really good players in that squad, but they were almost stronger as a group than they were as individuals. So I always thought that Corberan leaving them would be a real blow for Huddersfield, but I didn't think they'd be doing quite as badly as they are. Cardiff City, I'm sort of surprised in a way that Steve Morrison has gone. But then I was sort of surprised that he got the job in the first place. And I don't know him, but Cardiff are obviously a sort of an ambitious club. They're talking about bringing players through the system there. That was one of the reasons why they mentioned giving the job to Steve in the first place. And now he's gone. So they, listen, this is football clubs all over, isn't it? They talk long term, they talk about the medium term, and they only think short term. And they've obviously looked at the results there and decided that Steve's not really cutting the mustard.
Danny, to wrap things up, we will move to you on probably the biggest news, given we're running the international break, the biggest news around here in these parts over the past 24 hours or so. Paul Warren is looking, unless it's happened while we've been talking here already, it's looking increasingly likely to be the new Derby County manager. Huge blow for Rotherham. Big job for him. How much of a blow actually is it to Rotherham United?
Well, it's huge, isn't it? You know, I think I described him in a piece this morning as an iconic manager. I mean, to lead one club to three promotions into the Championship, you know, it's a remarkable effort, isn't it? And I think that's obviously what's caught Derby's eye. You know, they're desperate to get out. And I'm surprised, in honesty, the feeling that I get from it is, why is it taking so long for someone to take a punt on him? You know, I said to a few people after Chris went, you know, I think if I were looking for a new manager, obviously Paul's come in and done unbelievably well, so you can't argue with the job that he's done. I'm not saying for any second that, you know, Paul Ward should replace him, but he would have been one of my top, you know, sort of, I'd have been knocking on the door at Rotherham, put it that way, you know, in terms of he's shown what he can do on with respect to Rotherham, a limited budget. You know, every club has its sort of financial pressures, doesn't it? So that's no criticism of them. But, you know, what can he do you know, when he's back with a few more quid. I know we'll find that out at Derby, I'm guessing, when once they solve all their financial issues. And it just surprises me that it's taken so long for someone to take a punt on him. I think Huddersfield would have been, because there was a lot of talk about him going there, wasn't there? I think that would have been not a sideways step, but that doesn't seem like the sort of, you know, oh, I can't turn this down, going to Huddersfield from Rotherham. But Derby, to me, seems, I know it's dropping a division.
There's a bit more room for growth there, you would think.
The ceiling, respect to Huddersfield, the ceiling at Derby, you imagine, is a little bit higher, isn't it? And Paulo back himself to reach that, I'm sure it's a massive blow for Rotherham. But I just think he's obviously a brilliant manager, but I won't say get to know him, but having spent a bit of time in his company, everything, he's an absolutely brilliant man as well. You know, I'm sure everyone on this podcast will agree with that, and people who've listening to it, who've met him, will agree as well. Just a brilliant man. You know, ambitious, understanding. I think just the way that him and his players, it seems like a man that you really want to play for him. Do you know what I mean? You can understand why. It's that cliche, isn't it, about running through brick walls for managers. But I can see with Borney how that would manifest itself. You know, that the group there that he got possibly more out of as a team, as we touched on earlier with Huddersfield. You know, I think he's got more out of them as a team than they would do individually. And again, like we said, with Huddersfield, you know, what Paul might have looked at that and gone, how much further can I keep? How much further can I take this? You know, how much longer can I keep yo-yo in between Championship and, you know, and League One, and keep pulling rabbits out of hats almost, you know? So I can understand the appeal from his point of view. I can understand the appeal from Derby's point of view. And for Rotherham, you know, there's some big shoes to fill there, isn't there? You know, I don't know what they're going to, which route they're going to go down there. But whoever comes in, you know, it's got some damn big shoes to fill there. So it'll be interesting to see which way that goes. But yeah, I'd be like for him. We're not close. We're not friends or anything. But I think just as an observer of what he is like as a person, you know, I'm really delighted that he's going to get the chance. You know, I think Derby have got a real good man there as well as a real good manager. Yeah, and I'll keep a close eye on how he gets on down there. Obviously, there's a United connection there as well with young Willa Sula on loan down there as well. So it'd be interesting to see how Paul sort of handles him and how that all sort of unravels. You know, of course, Conor Hourihan and David McGoldrick are there as well. So there's a bit of a Blades connection as well. So it'd be interesting to see how they go this season, and hopefully they get promoted.
Right, lads, that's us for this week. We will be back, hopefully. I say hopefully, we've nailed it down now. We'll definitely be back next Thursday, where we will be able to look ahead to some actual football happening when United return to action against Birmingham City. James and Danny, thanks for your time today, and thanks everyone for listening and or watching. We'll see you next week. Cheers.